You and I back together again to start a brand new busy week, Monday, October 18th, 2021, on Connecticut Today. Milford-based author David Ellison joined in to talk about his new book, Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequity, and Troubled Schools. Former Florida GOP Congressman David Jolly stopped by. He's the National Executive Chairman of SAM, the Serve America Movement. He talked about the state of our national politics. And with news of another biting attack, I wondered why so many people are still attracted to pit bulls. Flipping the switch, a couple of weeks ago, it's been up and running, but we wanted to make sure that all the bells and whistles were ringing and whistling before we made the official announcement. So WICC 600, of course, WICC600.com. And now, WICC at 107.3 FM. So there you go. So maybe if you listen to me in FM in your vehicle or whatever, or on the back porch or in the office, may come in a little clearer than the AM side, but I'll equally nauseate you as much. I'm kidding. But thanks. Check it out. 107.3 FM right here on Connecticut Today, where it's you and I at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I've always considered myself, and I catch flack for this, and it's all in good fun, I've kind of been more a cat person than a dog. Don't get me wrong, I love dogs. Dogs are amazing creatures. If you study them, if you live with them, I don't have to tell you this. Dogs are amazing creatures. Some of them, though, some of them, not all of them, but some of them may not make great pets, may not be the best breeds to be around. And let me say something up front. I'm not chastising anybody out there who owns a pit bull. I'm not. That's a decision that you make. If a breed is legal, if a type of dog or cat or reptile is legal for you to own it, then God bless you. Go ahead, have a blast. Do it legally or do it responsible, on the responsible side. But man, oh man, we hear about these issues again and again and again in Connecticut here, in particular in places like Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven with, you know, with pit bulls. And you see this woman, the local media is on it right now, this Sandra Diamond Fox story in the Connecticut Post, Hearst, Connecticut Media. Bridgeport woman attacked by two pit bulls on the street. She says, quote, "I really want some justice." Now, we don't have to get into the exact details of the case. Suffice it to say, this woman was attacked. She nearly was bitten or mauled near a vein or an artery that doctors tell her, would have been, could possibly have been fatal. I am constantly amazed. And again, I know there's probably some of you out there saying, "Paul, why do you hate my dog?" No, I don't hate your dog. If you have a pit bull, that's fine. It's legal to have a pit bull in Connecticut without a muzzle. It's not legal in some other countries, some other parts of Europe. You may be interested to find out, but another story for another time. I am constantly, and I guess I'm constantly saddened by the amount of times that people are bitten or wounded by pit bulls. Now, I know what you're going to say because I've been taking this flack for 20 years. Well, Paul, other dogs bite. You're right, they do. They do. A chihuahua will bite you. If provoked, if you stop feeding it, a beagle will likely bite you. A German Shepherd will bite you. A Presser Canario will bite you. A Dachshund. Any dog variety, dog breed, they will bite you if they are so inclined. Whether they don't like something you're physically doing to them, they are hurt, they don't feel well, they are having instinct kick in, and they're protecting something, protecting their owner, whatever it happens. Dogs have a protection mechanism. But I am constantly fascinated, shall I say, with the amount of people that will own. And now I know there are different breeds of pit bulls, and I know that, you know, yes, it is the way the dog is brought up. Some pits are coming from fighting rings, and there's a difference when pits are purebred and brought up properly and trained properly versus, you know, a pit bull that's a mix that wasn't really handled properly. I get all that. But, man, you never hear poodles mauling people. You never hear beagles mauling or attempting to maul people. But we had this woman attacked in Bridgeport. We had a woman attacked and killed, I think, in New Haven. I think it was last year, several months ago, last year. And you know what? I used to not want certain breeds outlawed. But, man, the more I read about this stuff, I don't know, I'm leaning that way a little bit. And look, I know you love your pitties and everything, and they are fiercely loyal dogs. And some of them can be really cute. But I liken it to this, and you may agree with me on this, you may not, you can chime in, whatever, with your own experiences. And by the way, over the last year or so, I've been lunged at by three pit bulls. Just an owner walking by me or walking on the other side of the street, and I don't know what it is, what I'm wearing, if he didn't like the colors, he or she. But I've been lunged at by a pit three times. There you go. So whatever. Maybe I'm just unlikable. But you know how the forces who aren't really fond of guns, and they'll say, well, there's a difference between having just a pistol or a shotgun for hunting in your house versus an assault weapon or an AR-15. And if you got to have one, it's better to have the one that won't cause mass destruction. Now, you know, I've debated that off and on because you should be able to own the kind of gun that is legally allowed for you to own. I get that. But can you apply that same logic to dog breeds? In other words, to me, there is no such thing as a bad dog. They're all God's creatures, right? Whether it's a little toy poodle, what they call teacup poodle or something like that, or all the way up to a, you know, 200-pound, you know, Doberman or whatever, a huge dog, they're all God's creatures. You know, they should answer to themselves and not to men and women as owners, but we do. But can you deny that some breeds are just more dangerous to have? And again, even a pit bull that attacks someone, even a pity that attacks someone, is doing it for a reason. Is there a genetic predisposition, which many dog experts say that pit bulls have, that makes them more apt to do that? Probably. Probably. And again, a lot of pits in the inner city, look, you and I know what the deal is there. A lot of those pits are owned for protection. There are dog fighting rings still over the state. I think the state cracked down on a major ring the other day. But I would never, and this is just me, I would never chance owning a breed like that that is not necessarily a bad dog, but because of its genetic makeup, its instinct, its predisposition to do stuff like that, that it often happens. Again, you know, there is a reason that if you go to some of these websites and you see which breeds lead to dog bites and mauling deaths, look who's on top or near the top. Folks, if you don't believe me, just take a look. We like to have local authors on every so often, keeping it local here and letting you know that there are great people in the area that write some great books. Our next guest is David Ellison. David's got a new book out, Milford Resident, Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequality, and Troubled Schools. There's a threefer right there. David, hi, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Great. Yourself?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay, David. I never complain because when I do, David, nobody listens. So I just push ahead. That's how I get things.
Nobody listens to me either.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, but at least you had the guts and the ability to write a book. See, that's something I could never do, but that's another discussion for another day. Why write this? Why write Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequality, and Troubled Schools? Did the inspiration come all at once, David, or was this kind of building in you for a while?
No, it's building in me for a while. And it's the anger and frustration with what is happening in society. And, you know, I'd like to make a difference if possible. So, you know, I wrote my first book in 2017 and for similar reasons, but nothing's changed. It's probably gotten worse since then. So thus, you know, this book is totally different than the first book. And I really, you know, went into these issues significantly. Just that way, it's racial inequity, not inequality.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a bad reading.
I say that because those words are entirely different.
Yeah.
And some people read it quickly and see that. And so I get bashed from the left and bashed from the right when this is really not a political book. But, you know, inequity is about injustices, and inequality is a quantitative term. So,
yeah.
And I don't think we'll ever, you know, we're never going to have equality, you know, as far as wealth and things like that are concerned, you know, not in a capitalistic free market society that we have, and nor should we. But inequity, well, we can deal with those.
Somebody, David, may be listening to us right now at, you know, 3:35 on a Monday, October 18th, and say, okay, another one of these books. I've seen this stuff debated ad nauseum. What am I going to learn from this book? So, David, if somebody is browsing in the bookstore and they look at the spine or the cover of your book here, Repairing Our Divided Nation, what might someone, you think, learn from this? What could you inspire them to do or to think after reading this?
Well, this is a history book, and I don't claim to have all the answers, but I read 17 books from noted scholars to put this book together, and they're brilliant. So I cover a number of different issues, heavily quoted, but there's a lot from history that we need to learn. I love Rafiki from The Lion King. The past can hurt. But the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it, and we must learn from it. So I think, you know, one of the things that I deal on is education, what has to be done there, particularly as far as history is concerned. And my approach is I would like the history of racism to be taught, go back thousands of years to the Egyptians and the Jews, come up towards slavery in the United States, but, you know, start to really get deeper when we get to Reconstruction and what happened with racism going forward, and also cover, you know, the Holocaust too, because I learned from, you know, my readings that this one particular author, her bent on the whole thing is that we should not use the term anti-Semitism. It should be called what it really is, which is racism. So I thought that was an interesting little nugget that I, you know, one of the things I learned, you know, during my research.
Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequity, and Troubled Schools. David Ellison of Milford is the guest. David, hang on. Take a quick break here. Do a little business. Come back and speak more about the book Repairing Our Divided Nation. First, though, traffic and weather together. 3:36 on a Monday at WICC. Milford editor and writer David Ellison is the guest. Name of the book, Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequity, and Troubled Schools. You know, David, I interview a lot of folks a lot like you with some fascinating ideas on what should be taught, what shouldn't be taught, how we have to deal with certain things. But, David, doesn't it really come down to, in the end, the fact that people have to want to change? And you have people on both sides of the political spectrum, David, that no matter how well things are documented, no matter how well things are explained, no matter how well things are debated, there are people on both sides. I don't know how big the percentage is, David, but they certainly are the loudest. And they don't want to hear anything that changes their perception of the world. What do you think of that?
Well, people only read, watch, or read something that reinforces their preconceived notion of the world or anything else. So, you know, that's a problem out there. my father and his best friend, my father's since passed away. His best friend is now 92 years old. He became, I call him my Connecticut father when my parents moved to Florida in June of 1976. And I was just to admonish both of them as I got a little older. And I said, you know, you only listen to what's on the right. You only listen to what's on the left. I said, you guys got to be reading everything, watching everything. And, but they were the best of friends. They could hash things out. And that's when we had more of a liberal society, what I would call a liberal society at that particular time, when, based on individual dignity, open markets, limited government, and a faith in human progress brought about by debate and reform, civilly. Okay. And his father, my father's best friend, by the way, my Connecticut dad, he's a black gentleman. Okay. So we've been the closest of friends forever, our two families. And we could always do it civilly, but I try to get them to read across the aisle. And that is a big problem today. People only want reinforced what they already believe, and that's pretty damn sad. A friend of mine kind of schooled, tried to school me a little bit by saying, well, I don't like a couple of the people, that you quoted. And I said, okay, how about the other people on the other side? There were 17 books here. It's pretty evenly mm-hmm. split. And he says, Dave, you make a good point. You read everything. So, and that's what I do. I believe what I bring out. Okay. I believe, and some people have said this book should be required reading of people, okay? Because it's really not political, but I'm just bringing out historical events,
yeah.
Okay, which can make a better government if we learn from our past. There are people today who poo-poo the Constitution. They want it to be a living document. Well, mm-hmm. I go through that, okay? And the Constitution is relevant today, and I prove it in there, and I'll go so far as to say that I think America's biggest mistake was not following the Constitution during and shortly after Reconstruction, because had we adhered to the Constitution at that particular time, we wouldn't have the racial divide that we have today, nor would we have set the precedent for other future leaders to deviate.
Hey, David, here's a question I have, and I float this on my show all the time. I think that in this society, I call it the 10-80-10 rule. I think, David, that the vast majority of people, and that's why I say 80%, I think the vast majority of people get along with each other. I think they are not racist. There's not really animus there. They just try and live a good life. I think there's about 10% on the far left and about 10% on the far right that, in my humble opinion, David, should just shut up. And because they are magnified, David, I call them the crazy 10% on both sides, that are magnified by social media and all the platforms we have. I actually think America, and this is just me, David, I'm kind of the eternal optimist, and I've been on both sides of the political aisle of my life. I think America is a lot better off than people think. And I think that it's partly, along with social media, it's partly, David, my business, the business of journalism and radio and television, that a lot of times will just shove a microphone in front of the easiest person they can get. And David, I may be wrong on this. I don't think we have a really accurate read, not of what politicians think, David, but of what the average person in this country thinks.
I agree with you. I say 60-80% of the people, and I wrote this in my first book when I, declared myself a centrist. I like some of the ideas from the left, some from the right. It's not a wishy-washy approach. It's 100% one way, 100% the other way. But pick and choose from. Neither party has a lock on all the best ideas. So, and I said 60-80%. So you're 10-80-10. That fits my definition.
And David, because right, don't you have those moments when you're conducting your business, your real estate business, and I'm doing my thing, and we're kind of driving around and looking, and we get ourselves away from the yellers and the screamers on both sides, right? And we look at it and say, hey, the world's working today. The sun is out. People are smiling and laughing with each other in the stores, and there's business going on. And, oh, look, there are people having a nice lunch together. I mean, the world is okay. I know I'm crazy. I may be a right-wing, pudgy, suburban white guy for saying this, David, but I think that by and large, yes, we should brush up. We should read books like yours. But I think by and large, we're still okay, despite all the garbage we've gone through in this country.
I agree. Although, you know, I always strive for a little bit better. And, you know, most of what I talk about in education here is through the youth. I believe that if we can educate the youth, we can change the world.
Yes.
And they have to be taught. Okay. And some of the ugly things, too. Be taught some of the ugly things, but not in a political or ideological way, which I'm reading and hearing and seeing a lot of today, but in a factual way, kind of like the way Walter Cronkite used to give the news. He would never give his opinion. He would state the news. You made your own opinion. Now, you never knew whether Walter was left or right. I did, but basically, nobody who really dug in knew exactly who he was. But he was just a great, great guy. And he let people make decisions, on their own. I talk about that in my meeting, Leslie Stahl, who reiterated how she was trained when she was just starting off in journalism. And it's so different today. Everything's opinion, opinion, opinion. And they're trying to get the ratings up and their ad revenue. It's in social media. It's put us on a downward path. And I think that if we can take care of the education in the schools and really, going back to old time civics, but even deeper than that, I mean, pull out the warts, let people see all that stuff. But I believe that an educated person will become compassionate and have empathy for others who may have had a more difficult path to where they are today.
The name of the book, Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequity, and Troubled Schools. Thanks to a Milford author, David Ellison. Pick up the book at your local bookstore and, of course, Amazon.com. You can check it out there. Order it, paperback, Kindle version, all that. It's out there. Hey, David, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And take care, and we can chat down the road. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
David Ellison has been the guest. Once again, name of the book, Repairing Our Divided Nation, How to Fix America's Broken Government, Racial Inequity, and Troubled Schools. We've talked at length on this show about a topic fascinating to me, the Serve America movement, another movement to try and at least give people an alternative to the two major parties. We talked with the late Oz Griebel about this before he tragically passed away a few months back. And joining us right now is a former Republican member of Congress from Florida who right now, as we speak, is very active in SAM, the Serve America movement. In fact, he's in the state for a few days, and there are some SAM friend raiser events in the area. And by the way, SAM has now achieved a official party status in Connecticut, New York, Pennsylvania, Texas, and they are working on other places. A former Republican Congressman David Jolly is the guest. Congressman, good afternoon. It's Paul, the WICC. How are you?
Hey, thank you, Paul. It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
What made you get involved, David, with this SAM movement, which is gaining traction? You mean you're not one of those guys who stuck with your party from the day you were born till the day you pass away? No?
Well, I stuck with it for, I guess, better than 20 years. I did register as a Republican at 18 and had one of those traditional party trajectories that, you know, my personal politics started to contrast with the party, say, around the emergence of the Tea Party. And then I was just somebody who never could quite reconcile my affiliation with a party that elevated Donald Trump. And that was just a personal decision of mine. But, you know, I've been in politics my whole life, worked on Capitol Hill about 20 years, ended up serving as a member of Congress, always as a bit of a reform-minded, independent-minded Republican. And so, look, we all see organizations come and go. What struck me about Sam is it is a place for independent-minded voters, which first and foremost is important. But it's taken a different approach, Paul, and this is something I would challenge listeners to consider. I don't think there's any other organization like Sam, and that Sam is a true big tent, right? We welcome independent-minded voters from the left, right, and the middle. We don't suggest you have to be a centrist or a moderate or a progressive conservative. We want all viewpoints, all ideologies, all walks of life. And what we've done is we've built a coalition of people committed to simply problem solving, fundamental electoral competition and electoral reform, ranked choice voting, open primaries, basic tenets of civility and transparency, accountability. We think there's an appetite for that. So we're building an infrastructure capable of housing all those people from all over the spectrum. We think there's an opportunity here.
So, David, were you able or are you able still to fund a retirement plan for yourself and your family, maybe with a nickel for every time you've been called a rhino or an establishment or an establishment Republican? How much money has that gotten you so far?
You know, I asked David Frum that question. Some may be familiar with David Frum, the author and speaker. So, and Frum finally said to me, he said, you know what? I don't know what labels mean anymore. You know, if you want to say I'm not conservative or I am or I'm a rhino or I'm a Republican, it's meaningless at this point because we've so perverted the labels over the past 10 or 20 years. So, look, I will tell you, and this goes back to Sam's approach of including all voices. Mm-hmm. I'm the son of a minister, and I kind of come from the love all, serve all approach, which is hard to fit into politics. But at Sam, I love the idea that I can break bread and have common ground with people left, right, and center, because at the end of the day, what I want is a government that just solves immigration and education and health care and taxes.
Former Florida Republican Congressman David Jolly is the guest. Congressman, hang on. We'll do a quick break and come right back to you. We're talking about Sam, the Serve America movement. And again, they are gaining a foothold here. How far will it go? More with David Jolly coming up first, though. Traffic and weather together. 4:36 on a Monday at WICC. Former Republican Congressman from Florida David Jolly is the guest. He's now the National Executive Chairman of Sam, the Serve America movement. He's in Connecticut for a few days of activities, including four fundraiser events going on, Roxbury, Newtown, Hartford, and Stonington. Congressman, there have been third parties since the inception of this country. You know, the Greens are out there, the Libertarians are out there, there are various parties. Is ballot access the big bugaboo here? Because we all know, Congressman, that Democrats and Republicans do a real good job in all 50 states of keeping challengers off of the ballot, right?
They sure do. And as you mentioned, all 50 states have 50 different sets of rules. So I would say there's two challenges. First is, how do you build a coalition of the 40% who, when they register to vote, say, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat? And the Greens and the Libertarians have said, we're going to choose an ideology and ask everybody to meet us at this point on the left-right spectrum. So first, Sam does something differently. We don't tell people you've got to be left, right, or middle. We want all voices. Secondly, we're not building a platform where the national party pushes down answers on immigration, education, and health care. We go bottom up. We empower our candidates at the local level to make the decisions. But then, as you mentioned, we've got to do the legal things that get us ballot access. And here in Connecticut, because of the success of Oz Griebel and Monty Frank's campaign, we expect now in 22 to have a gubernatorial candidate again on the Sam line. And we also are electing local officials. Coming up in just a couple of weeks, the incumbent mayor of Newtown will be reelected, and he has decided to drop his Democratic Party registration, and he is now a Sam-registered voter, which makes him a Sam-elected mayor of Newtown here in 2 weeks. And I think listeners will see more Sam-affiliated candidates in the state of Connecticut here in the next year or two.
You have seen, David, as a member of the House, you've seen things from the inside. I have a theory. You tell me if I'm right or wrong or crazy or nuts, whatever. I think, David, and I've kind of been told this by former members of Congress, too, If you got rid of all the microphones and got rid of the party labels and got into a room and got all 500 and change members of Congress into a big room, which you do from time to time, and shut the doors and said, okay, let's just fix things without having to worry about donors and interest groups on the left and right and media hogs out there and everything, a lot more could happen. But just the way things are now, David, that almost precludes that from happening in it, and it fosters outright tension and distrust in the institution. What are your thoughts on that?
You are spot on. You could be a member of Congress yourself, Paul. I actually.
Oh God, David, they would wheel me out the first floor debate. They'd say, "Will the fine gentleman from Connecticut just get wheeled out, please?" But go ahead.
So, Paul, to your point, there were a few times I lost my temper on the House floor and just really, you know, raised my voice and got chastised for it. One time, I remember it was because I yelled, "We have the votes to pass this. If we just drop the R's and the D's next to our names, we have the votes." And it's true. We did. And I'll give you a more heartbreaking example. After the shooting at the Pulse nightclub, some people will recall there was a sit-in of Democratic members in the House, and it was over this question of no-fly, no-buy. If you're not allowed to board a plane, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. Well, that makes perfect sense, right? What also makes perfect sense is due process. If the government denies you that right, you should have some recourse. The Democratic bill did not provide for that recourse. Mm-hmm. So behind closed doors, I struck a compromise with my Democratic friends. I engaged in the sit-in with them, some would say the only Republican, and I said, let's add this provision of due process. I can bring 50 Republicans, you bring all Democrats, and we'll pass it. Mm-hmm. We had the votes to pass no-fly, no-buy in the moment of national tragedy. And the minority leader of the Democratic Party said, we are not going to do this because we cannot give Jolly a win. And it was nothing more than partisan politics. I had been redistricted and was standing for re-election in a tough race that was leaning Dem, and the Democratic leader would not allow the compromise to pass. Now, consider that. And look, this happens on both sides. This is not a shot at Democrats. I'm now an independent. I'm not carrying water for Republicans. Consider that. At a moment where Democrats are having a sit-in of the House, they've shut the House down to say to the country with conviction, we have to solve this issue. We actually solved it behind closed doors. And neither party would allow it to move for a vote.
Mm. And David Jolly, we see it happening right now with, listen, the Republicans are powerless. The Democrats have the votes. Pass the infrastructure bill. Get that done. And then everybody can have a big pizza fight or a big food fight over the $3.5 trillion bill. But, you know, I had a friend of mine, an old high school friend, a congressman, call me the other day saying, you know what, I'm thinking of retiring, but if they can just get this infrastructure thing done, I'll work another year, year and a half on some of these projects. It's maddening. It's just maddening.
And, Paul, here's the crazy thing. You're right, the hard infrastructure bill, planes, trains, and automobiles, passed the Senate with 69 votes, including Mitch McConnell, Republicans and Democrats, and House Democrats. And honestly, look, I get the strategic decision they're making and Biden's making. They want to go big on the other bill. But we could actually have an infrastructure bill here in the country that Donald Trump couldn't deliver on over 4 years. But Democrats have decided not to move it. And I think a lot of people, again, this is where Sam comes in. If you're an independent-minded voter committed to problem-solving, you're saying, wait a minute, we've got an infrastructure bill that got 69 votes in the Senate, and we're not going to enact that into law? It's crazy, but it's partisan politics.
Finally, former Congressman David Jolly of Florida, what's the Sam outlook look like heading into next year, which, of course, saw the all the consultants already wringing their hands over on both sides. We have another congressional round of elections. Do you folks hope to or anticipate on fielding more candidates? How's it look for 2022?
We do. As I mentioned, in Connecticut, you certainly will see candidates in 21 and 22, probably a gubernatorial candidate, hopefully some state legislative candidates. We may have statewide candidates in Texas and in Pennsylvania. Look, we are ambitious, but we're not naive. And in some states where we might play a spoiler, we don't intend to do that. But where we can organically grow a coalition that elects reform-minded people, local, state, and federal, we're going to be active in those states. And that's why we're here in Connecticut. Why I'm here this week is to support the Sam Connecticut chapter.
All right, the website, joinsam.org. You don't have to, folks. You don't have to. You don't. If you just want to check it out, or you want to. Look, just go get the information. Little knowledge never hurts. Joinsam.org. Joinsam.org. He's in Connecticut for some friend-raising activities, as they like to put it, over the next few days. Former Florida Republican Congressman David Jolly has been the guest. He is the National Executive Chairman of SAM. Congressman, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully next time you're in the state, give me a call and we can chat. Thank you.
We'll do it. Thank you, Paul.
All right. Former Florida GOP Congressman David Jolly. Well, there you go. All right. I remember when he was in the House. And see, folks, what did he say? And I've had this... This has been told to me now by former Congressman Jolly. Joe Lieberman used to tell me this all the time. By the way, he's coming on the show this week. He has a new book out that's causing quite a few waves of eyebrow raising with some of the stuff he talks about there. But I've had people in Congress tell me that forever, that if you stripped away the party labels, the need to fundraise, the need to, frankly, tick off the other side and keep the fight going, a lot more would get done. Not everything. Not everything. There are still some very contentious issues here on guns, on abortion, on taxes. But stuff like infrastructure and basic stuff that everybody can rely on. But, again, like I say, you've got the 10% of hardcores on the right and the 10% of hardcores on the left that just don't want harmony in governing. They never have, and they never will. Okay, thanks once again to former Florida GOP Congressman David Jolly. Good chat with him. Could have gone for an hour with a guy like him about his experiences in D.C.